Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, well, welcome to a brand new Hot Spurs podcast. It is Monday, the 26th of July, 2021. I am Steve in Leonstone, Essex. And on today's My Spurs Journey, we have got Tottenham royalty. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got Mr. Rob White. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm fine, thank you. Very kind of you to describe me as Tottenham royalty. Sometimes it's a blessing, sometimes it's a curse, I think.
I describe everyone as that. No, we've got you, know, we've got you on.
I'm a very equitable person, so I agree. I actually, you know, don't get me into the royalty thing, so I'd rather not be classed as royalty. That's fine.
you are. Like, we've had some brilliant guests so far. We've had, of course, the lovely Dame Judy Welch. We've had Martin Cloak, who, you know, you obviously know very well, Rob.
Yes.
And Peter Hain, of course. Mm-hmm. We've had him on. We've had some brilliant guests, Anthony Costa from Blue. Just all in the back catalogue. Go and have a look, whichever podcast feed you use. Spotify. I didn't even realise we're on Spotify as well.
Yeah.
How about that?
Very good.
So, you know, go and have a listen because they're all brilliant. They're all timeless as well because this show is all about going through your Spurs memories. Now, there's a certain show called The Spurs Show, which about 3 or 4 weeks ago started something very similar. I'm not going to say that they nicked my idea because it's different as well. So yeah, let's do that. But there was one episode with Mr. Paul Coit, who I'm desperate to get on this show as well. I've had him on before, but I want him to do these list of questions because I was in Tesco's on a Sunday walking around, and Paul Coit, the way he told his stories, I was blubbing, absolutely blubbing. I don't know if you've heard that one, Rob, have you?
I haven't heard it yet. No, I will. I'll give it a listen. Yes, I will definitely give it a listen.
They've done about 10 or 11 of these, and they're brilliant guests. And I'm also saying all this because I'm desperate to get Mike Lee to do My Spurs Journey with me as well. And whenever I meet Mike, we always have a right laugh, and I always say, you know, do you want to come on my show? Yeah, sure. And then just, you know, try and get in touch.
Well, you can ask him about his goalkeeping exploits because I've played a couple of games Spurs loosely titled. I've played against Spurs legend side, but I've also played. So every Mike's one of his jobs is an agent for talent, for theatre talent. So Mike spends a lot of time in Edinburgh in August, and I also visit Scotland a lot, so I've played in in a comedian's 11 against Stenhouse Muir, I think it was, or Cowdenbeath supporters club, and the cat Mike Lee was in goal. So you need to get him on and talk about goalkeeping with him.
I'm desperate to get him on. We followed similar paths in terms of our podcast and things. And, you know, there's times when I've been with him, not been with him, but walked past him at Spurs and he's chatting to someone I know and a mate of a mate and all that. And, you know, the way it all ties up is I saw him once chatting to the dad of a guy called Brett Goldstein, who is a brilliant actor, comedian. He was in Derek, currently in Ted Lasso. And he does a fantastic podcast all about films. And I met him about 25 years ago in Spain, in La Manga. And we were out drinking and stuff, and it's a very small resort, so you always chat to the same people. Yeah. And he was with a guy called Richard Pearson, who, you know, we were all quite young at the time. And Richard Pearson went on to start Headspace, if you know what that is. Mm-hmm. So he's doing very well for himself, thank you very much, in LA. Brett Goldstein's doing brilliantly as an actor and everything else, but he's got this film podcast and he asks these quirky questions. And I just said to him, I tweeted him and said, would you mind if I use those questions for a Spurs idea I got? He said, well, actually, I'd rather you didn't, blah, blah. And I upset him a little bit. I said, no, don't worry. No one, I'm not nicking your idea completely, because I'm just going to change the word movie for player or match. And he said, OK, no problem. So there we go. So that's the foundation for my
that's
Spurs
the
journey.
Origin of the questions. OK, cool.
That's it. So, and what we'll do is we'll get straight into it. But what we'll do very quickly, Rob, is just have a look at what's going on at the moment with Spurs. So what's your take on all what's going on at the moment?
I have to be slightly, I have to self-edit here, because obviously I'm a board member at the Trust, and it's been an eventful sort of few months one way or another with our relationship with the club. As a supporter, I'm speaking purely as a supporter, I'm sort of, I think I'm in this weird point, and I think a lot of society's in this weird point where we can't actually remember what our original normal was. And we talk about getting back to normal, and I think we've all been away from normal for so long that it's difficult. And a lot of the stuff that's going on at Spurs just seems quite remote, which is really weird, as I live, well, very close to the ground. So it's strange. I mean, it's I don't know whether it's times of massive transition. It feels like the decision with Nuno was obviously, he wasn't first choice, he wasn't second choice, he wasn't third or fourth choice. So yeah, I think it's just really strange time, and maybe when we do reset, when we get back into the stadium, then we can have a clearer idea of what's going to happen. That's my immediate take on it. We're seeing the sort of end of, well, we've seen obviously Lamela going, the end of the Magnificent Seven, or whatever we'd like to call them. I'm not sure that many of them were magnificent. So, you know, it just feels like a massive time of change. And I guess football, nobody really knows what's going to happen to football in the short to medium term, whether money is available, whether people are bluffing, whether it's a game of poker that people are playing. So, yeah, I think there's lots of unanswered things at the moment.
I think that there's, like you say, massive changes, things going on. Things like every day there's something new. So you can get into they're thinking about, you can get into the ground with the double jab, which I am on that side of. Mm-hmm. But my son is 12. So when come Man City game, if I go with my son, and that is the great joy of my life. Mm. I don't, I can go with a mate, but see you later, Sam. I'm going to football. I don't want to do that. I want to go with my boy. And if it comes down to it, I'll probably give the tickets away, because I want to watch my beloved Spurs with my son. And that's what we do. Saying that, I'll probably go spare ticket going. So that's one thing I worry about, first of all, because I wanted desperate to get back to the stadium, love the stadium. I'm in that camp. With the manager situation, they spoke to this guy, that guy, that guy, that guy. In my opinion, I tried to keep an open mind on it and think, well, why did they speak to Gattuso? And why did they speak to this guy and that guy? And all I can think is probably agents said would you like to have a chat with Gattuso? Mm-hmm. And they were in a room, or they did it over Skype, they chatted. And at the end of it, Levy said, actually, you're not the guy for us. Or, read on Twitter, more likely. But, to say that Nuno wasn't that choice, where we currently sit, where we currently stand, I'm quite happy. I don't think there's a candidate. For example, Rafa's gone to Everton. Would we have preferred him? Maybe some people would. I wouldn't. I'm quite happy. Mm-hmm. So I always look at it and go, when there's a player or a manager or something, if they go to Liverpool, City, United, Chelsea, I always think to myself, look, they're going to those teams. When we miss out on a player, or I always think, Mane all those years ago when we could have got him, he went to Liverpool. He didn't go to West Ham. He didn't go to Newcastle. They're not going to Villa, these guys. We're not missing out massively on a brilliant manager who was available, Allegri. Has Allegri gone back to Juventus before I
I've got no idea.
Anyway, let's say Allegri, you know, he's available, but we don't go for Allegri, or he turns Tottenham down and instead he goes to West Ham. And you think, hang on, now things are bad. But that isn't happening. I still see the players, the top players, the managers. You know, we're still in that. We're not being undermined just yet, if you know what I mean.
No,
you know, it would be lovely to snatch a player away from Arsenal. That would be sort of, you know, actually we are still kind of going places. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, I know we're sort of going over old ground here, but I personally can't wait for the day that the Jose Mourinho autobiography comes out, because I still maintain that, and I know nothing about, I've got no inside information, but my football brain and what I spent most of my life obsessed with football, and that to me smacks of the fact he wasn't sacked, he just walked. Mourinho did. And I think there's several things that are quite interesting about that. I think it's the connections that he has and the power that he has within the game. And I don't know, there was a lot of knowledge that was probably shared behind the scenes with people. And I think that's why it seemed to me that people were put off coming to Spurs. It's the sort of thing that, as fans, we've always presumed. I describe it as sometimes it's a bit like the brochure. You know, when you turn up for holiday and the hotel doesn't look like the what you were sold in the brochure. I think sometimes that, you know, we all think that that's probably what happens. So I think there's a big fallout from that. And I think it's, yeah, I don't know. I have to really bite my tongue sometimes with this stuff, because it's easy enough to bash people at the club. And I think they do some very good stuff. But I think actually there was a point, I think it was a point Bardi made the other week on this podcast, was that the further that Daniel can get from the football matters, the better, Daniel Levy. And I think if that can happen, great. I'm not 100% convinced that can happen. And I don't know whether there's, yeah, anyway, enough from me at the moment.
All these points are amazing. We could go on and on and on and on and on, but just picking the bones out of that. Jose Mourinho, in my opinion, gave two years ago, whatever it was, gave Levy a ring and said, you know, you've always wanted me as your manager. Just to let you know, I'm available. So that's my first instinct. When he became the manager, I thought, hello, I don't think Levy went to him. I think Jose came and said, you know, if you do want a manager, that's conspiracy theories or whatever. And yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, with six days to go to a cup final, maybe he looked at it and went, do you know what, if I lose this, I'm a whatever manager, but if I leave now, then I can always turn around and say they sacked me 6 days before the cup final, which of course is what he's saying. That is what he's saying, that is what everybody's saying.
Yeah, and there is obviously no coincidence that it's the day that the absolute ridiculous debacle over the ESL was launched. Was you know, that came out. That's the same time that Mourinho leaves the club. And I wonder, again, my personal take on it, my personal conspiracy theory, is I think probably Jose knew, he must have known, he knows so many people within the game. I think Jose knew all about that. And I'm not sure that Daniel had totally informed him of all that was going to happen. And I think it was one of these situations where actually this comes to light, and it's a really good time for Jose, exactly what you're saying, a brilliant excuse, a brilliant cloud for Jose to go, you know what, I'm out of here. And I think, which is, again, my whole suspicion, that's it. I think there has to be some sort of, you know, any big organisation has a plan in place if something happens, basically.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember the exact word for it, but I don't think that was as updated as it should have been from the football point, from the manager's point of view, management point of view at Tottenham. I don't think they were completely ready for that. I think Daniel was caught off guard. He wouldn't ever admit to it. And I don't know about that. I think that's what happened, because the rest of the other, 57, 58, however many days it was, smacked to me a little bit of panic.
Mm.
And then, sorry.
And I was going to say, but there wasn't a clear candidate. Just in defence of Levy, there wasn't a clear candidate. But for goodness sake, with the cup final coming up and five or six games left of the season, give Glenn Hoddle a ring. You know, give Harry Redknapp a ring. Give Klinsmann a ring, whatever. Just say, guide us to the end of the season, would you?
Probably don't talk to Daniel anymore, you know. And also, another point I think is really interesting is the relationship between Nuno, Jorge Mendes, Mourinho, all of that stuff. It's just quite interesting how that is just, and in a way, it just shows that ultimately financial stuff is more important than football stuff in some circles, I think.
Yeah. Let's say one final thing on this. I completely agree that, you know, get Daniel Levy out of buying players, selecting players, whatever some people think he does. However, I do want him involved when it comes to Harry Kane, because at the end of the day, it's his decision. And Kane can, I don't know if he's turned up to training today. I haven't looked, but there's no news on it at the moment. Presumably he was back today or sometime this week. Charlie Kane, his agent, Man City, whatever they want to throw at it. At the end of the day, Rob, it comes down to Daniel Levy. And Daniel Levy will either say yes or no to that, because there's no sentiment. You know, Harry Kane could go and beg. Harry Kane could not turn up. Harry Kane can do whatever he wants. See, you know, at the end of the day, Levy will not go, I've had a bid of 100 million. Okay, you know, we'll let you go. He's not doing it, is he? He's not doing it. He's like, no, 150 million, 160, whatever it is. And we want to get our players in place first, like they did with Bale. And we want this and we want that. And then you can do the deal. What do you think about that, Rob?
I agree. I agree. It's going to be the right price. And theoretically, it's really interesting because City have a vacant number 10 shirt, obviously because Aguero's gone. But they proved last year they don't need Aguero to win that league. They don't need Harry Kane to win that league. They maybe need Harry Kane to win a Champions League. That's the only thing. And actually, obviously, in the British, in the English league, they're a club that can afford it. So I think it's really interesting, the Kane situation. Again, there's one thing that's proved is that... obviously, Daniel's
sorry,
not.
Rob. I had a delivery at the door and I had to go and get a delivery. Sorry.
Cool. Daniel, ultimately, Daniel is fantastic at financial things and fantastic at generating revenue. But he's not a fan like you and I. And I think that's really interesting. I think there's a whole book or a podcast on defining fans, because it's a spectrum. There are so many different things that people get out of the joy of watching football. And I think if the right offer comes in, of course Harry Kane will go, and it can be justified within the club as a pure business decision in these tough times.
I mean, as a Spurs fan, I'm happy that Levy will stand his ground and not let Kane go. I'd rather, I'm such a Spurs fan that I'd rather a grumpy Kane for the first couple of weeks. You're at Spurs. City didn't pay enough money for you. So you stick it out, and then you know when you come to realise that you can't move till January or next summer, which he probably will do. You know, let's face it. If we keep Kane for another season, his cost goes down because he's only got 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah.
Rather than some fans. Who are saying, I don't know, let him go. He's done enough for us. You know, we've held him back. We haven't invested the money. You know, he goes with our blessing. I'm not in that camp at all, you know, and I know that Flav and people like that are not in that camp at all. You know, as soon as you leave Spurs, you're dead to me. Where do you stand on that, Rob? Would you, you know, are you like, you know, actually, let him go, 120 million, no problem. Or are you like, no, we want 200 million.
There are days where I wish that Man City would come in for me, you know, come in, and it was that simple as a supporter where you could just go and support Real Madrid or whatever.
You definitely can't do that.
No, if you go through, well, I couldn't. I physically couldn't. But if you go through the list, and we've all done it, from Berbatov to Michael Carrick to Kyle Walker to our friend Sol, every player that we have, you know, as fans, we know a good player, we know a bad player, all the players that are very, very good players that move on, that go to, breaks my heart to say it, go to better clubs, end up winning something. So you can't actually, you can't sit there and say, well, what have you, you know, if you'd gone to a club and didn't win anything, then that would be fine. But actually, if you've moved on and you've gone and won something, then ultimately that's what your career is about. And I know there is this thing about, yes, stay and become Tottenham's greatest ever goal scorer. I think it's a time where the club have to match the ambition of the supporters and the ambition of the top players. And I don't think, brutally, my own personal opinion is, I don't think the club will ever get to that point.
No, no. But and I agree with you. So what I take is, and I promise we'll get to the fun questions in a minute. but what I take from that, and I agree with you, is that in that instance, which I agree with, we have to pick out the great moments then. And we'll get onto this because, you know, the great moments are getting into finals. The great moments are, you know, the great goals. The great moments aren't winning trebles. The great moments aren't, you know, there are doubles, of course, that we can talk about. But, you know, it's not all about, you know, in this day and age, the fact that we got to a Champions League final and West Ham fans and Everton fans and Liverpool fans, well, not Liverpool because they won it, but, you know, these fans of other clubs, ridicule us. Bottled it. You bottled, you know, Simon Jordan, you bottled it. You stunk the place out. Well, sorry, Simon, but, you know, Crystal Palace haven't won a trophy ever. They've not won one major honour in their entire history. And yet Crystal Palace ex-chairman take the mickey out of Spurs fans because 2 years ago we happened to get to a Champions League final. And I'm not having it, Rob. I absolutely had the best month of my life from when Moura scored the goal to the moment Sissoko handballed it. That was the best, like, 28 days I've ever had in my life. And I'm not having that taken away. Anyway, let's get into the questions.
Let's go.
Because, you know, this is what we're here for. So my Spurs journey with Mr. Rob White. Here we go. What is the first match you ever remember seeing?
Well, the first match I remember seeing was the, what was the Norwich League Cup game? 71 League Cup final, 71, I think it was, where Ralph Coates scored.
Yeah, well, it was before my time. So, you know, but I do, I've seen the goal.
Sorry. 1973. That's the first one I can vividly remember. I was taken. I would have been nine at the time.
Was 73 the Norwich one?
I think it was. Yeah, I get confused.
71 wasn't there.
Yeah, 71 might have been the Villa one.
I can't. Yeah.
All anyway, right. but
we should know that. Cole, we're off to a bad start with that.
I know. Norwich. Well, before that, I've sort of got, my mum took me in the late 60s to the, basically to a couple of games. I don't know what they were, and all I remember was going in the players, so the players entrance, basically, where the old car park used to be on the high road. This is obviously late 60s. I remember the commissionaire, who was, you know, there in his whatever the commissionaire's uniform they used to wear.
So
I remember going
four or five.
Exactly. I remember going up the big flight of wooden steps and sitting there watching in this big wooden stand and the things like, you know, just the light and the smells and the sounds. And then as I guess most anybody that's been to football with a 5 or 6 year old kid realised they get bored very quickly. And at the back of the West Stand, halfway down, there was a player's wives' tea room, basically. And I remember very vividly going into that tea room, and that used to overlook the car park. And I would just sit there and watch and look at the cars, basically. So that's my really and maybe that's what I should have taken from life and spent the rest of my Spurs watching career, watching the cars in the car park. I might have had more fun, I reckon. But yeah, so it's late 60s, early 70s, basically.
Yeah, oh, that's fantastic. So, but the actual match would have been the. Did you go to that cup final, the Norwich one, then?
Yeah, that's the one I went to. I got taken by a family friend who was he knew a lot of people at the club, and yeah. I remember being absolutely astounded, almost quite scared about the. It's funny enough, we were talking the crush back then, walking up Wembley Way, basically, and just that the amount of people. I remember very little about the game. I just remember it being very. I just remember Wembley being absolutely massive. I don't remember where I sat, and I remember Ralph Coates scoring the goal. And that, so yeah, it would have been. I'm pretty sure it was the 1973 League Cup final.
Yeah, and of course you talk about the crush there, and you know the awful scenes from last the Euros. The final.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think people are talking enough about the fact that it was a release. You know, we've all been cooped up for a year and a half. We haven't been to a football match. Mm. Most of those people are there, you know, idiots, absolutely. But they haven't been to a football match. And one of my big fears is when we go, you know, to that first game, Man City, which, yeah. you know, we're going to lose, let's face it. You know, but we're going to be sitting there and, you know, it's all exciting. We're at a match. We haven't been for ages. And then some bloke, you know, first of all, they're going to be booing, you know, if they carry on the taking the knee, which I absolutely am with. And so, you know, that's going to start arguing. And then there are going to be other people shouting and screaming and booing and this. And I fear that people are going to forget that actually at football matches now, you know, there's a certain decorum where you appreciate, you know, other people's opinions or whatever. But I just fear this like release that people are going to go, oh, we're a football stadium now. We can start acting like absolute Herberts. You know, I don't know. Did you have that thought at all, Rob? Or
I don't know. I really hope not. I just think yeah. there's going to be an awful lot of divided opinion on it. I mean, I think still, as I said earlier, I think society, we're still, there are people that are, you know, we've got the whole people that are anti-vax, we've got the people that are masks, no masks, and it is back to this sense of not quite remembering what normal was, really.
Yeah.
And I just hope that some sort of common decency will prevail, basically.
I really hope so, you know, because we've argued over, you know, on Twitter, leave you in, leave you out, this, that, there. I, you know, when you do meet someone face to face, please don't you know, start shouting and screaming like you do on Twitter. I fear that people have forgotten how to talk to people face to face. But yeah, let's see. All right. So what's the funniest football match you ever saw?
I think the funniest match I ever saw, or I guess the funniest situation of a match that I ever saw was the back in, gosh, memory's not good, was it? Arsenal Champions League against Barcelona. Was that 2007, 2009, whatever it was? Anyway, the one against Barcelona, the Champions League final.
Yeah.
I've got to sort of come clean now and admit that I have, you know, it's like AA here. I've got a few select friends who are Arsenal fans. And so anyway,
We've all got them, Rob. Don't worry.
Is that right? I'm okay saying that. It's a safe space.
We have them because, particularly now, I mean, one of my Arsenal friends at school he's my best mate at the moment, because I'm loving going into his room and going, oh dear, what is going on with your club? No, it's going to be great. We're back. No, you're not. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so we went to a like a wine bar restaurant in the city, and he'd got tickets for this thing, limited, you know, it was limited space basically in this thing.
This is the game where the Campbell scored, right?
Yeah, that's the one. So it's, my memory for facts and figures on games is absolutely. But anyway, so we're there, Campbell scores. They got Lehman sent off. The goalie got sent off. They went down to 10 minutes fairly early in the game, actually. And they basically, I don't know how much you remember. Samuel Eto'o scored the equaliser with, I think it was about 70-odd minutes, basically. Mm. But what I realised when that goal went in was that at this particular restaurant, there was another bar that was 15 yards from another section of this bar. And the feed that they had on that TV was about 2 or 3 seconds in front of the rest of the feed, basically, the feed that we were watching in this particular room. And I realised that. So I got up and for the rest of the match was watching the game 2 or 3 seconds ahead of my mate who was sitting there with his Arsenal mates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when, what was his name? Belletti. When Giuliano Belletti scored the winner, which was not long after Eto'o had scored, I knew, and I had that perfect moment as a Spurs fan.
It's like you could look at his face.
You know this tsunami of grief is going to come to them very quickly. And I just looked to my left and he sort of caught my eye and I think he twigged basically what was happening. And you could see this horrible sort of car crash, you know, unfolding. So, yeah, I think that was a very funny situation to be in. And, you know, like most Spurs fans, there's a point in my life where I almost derive more joy from them losing than us winning, you know.
Absolutely, no shame in that whatsoever.
Really. Yeah,
I love it, and you know, I've said it many times, but when the guy scored in the League Cup final, we'd won it in 2008, and I think it was either 09 or 10 when Arsenal went there, and they hadn't won a trophy for a few years, a bit like us. And they all went there, said, "Well, we got Birmingham, who are going to get relegated." And the absolute calamity, Koscielny and was it Szczesny in goal?
Yeah.
And then the guy who was at Newcastle, was it Martins or something, scored for Birmingham. And the, you know, the joy and the hilarity. So absolutely right to find hilarity in an Arsenal loss.
You've just reminded me of the game at the Emirates where the 4-3 that we won. Was it 4-3 or 3? 4-3, wasn't it? Yeah.
When
Cabal scored. Was that 4-3?
3-2.
Sorry, 3-2. Yeah. And I'd very long-windedly, I'd made a pact with the footballing gods who I believe do exist.
Yeah.
That actually, if I stayed off of listening to the game on the radio or social media, then we would win at the Emirates. So I took my daughters at the time, they were very young, and I took them to Decathlon Sports in, what do you call it, Lakeside, over that way. I took them there, and I took them shopping, basically, and just thought, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my good dad bit for the afternoon.
Okay.
And we were in Decathlon, and there was some gooner sales assistant that wandered over to his mate, and I think they went 2-0 up very, very quickly.
That's right.
And he sort of said something about, "Oh, see, we're beating that lot again." And I was like, you know, my afternoon is completely ruined. And then I just went and tried to forget about the football. We went to TK Maxx. We went for something to eat. We did the whole thing. And then about 10 to 5, it was 3 o'clock.
It was 12:30.
Oh, was it 12:30? That's it, yeah. So my phone starts beeping messages and I'm thinking, oh, I've got to look at my phone. But that point where you think, yeah, but the game might not be over and I might influence the whole thing if I've made this pact with the footballing gods.
Wow.
So I turn my phone on and basically lo and hold, that's the result. And I couldn't stop myself. I had to go back into Decathlon and find the sales assistant, the original sales assistant, and just wandered up to him and asked him if he'd heard.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, what the score was. And he just looked at me and walked off, basically. So I'm very petty from that point of view as well.
I can't believe it. Now, just for those of you that don't know, Decathlon is a huge department store in the retail part, so not in the actual shopping mall of Lakeside, in the retail part.
Yes.
So in order to go from there to TK Maxx in the mall, I believe, then for a bit of food wherever you went, TGI Fridays or whatever you did, and then back to Decathlon, that's quite a schlep. So I applaud that. That is proper dedication. And by the way, can you watch less games in the future?
Well, sometimes I think I prefer, yeah.
Because if you believe in those football gods, then they're obviously looking down on you for doing that. So please do that more often, Rob. What about a football match that made you cry?
Tears,
whatever.
Yeah, there's I think it's probably one that comes up quite often, or I hope it would come up quite often, which was the final game at White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
The finale. Yeah, it was a fantastic thing. Up until a year ago, I spent quite a lot of, one of the jobs I did was working with an organisation called Sporting Memories, which helps people with dementia and Alzheimer's. It's about generating conversations through the power of sport, the power of reminiscence, one of the things that men aren't very good at is communicating, so I'm told by people. But the things that we do communicate very well and very efficiently and very confidently about are sport. And one of the things about that whole game for me was brilliant. The week before it, there were so many stories that people were talking about the old ground and how they started going to games. And obviously for me, it's always been a very special place because, it's a place where I can connect with my dad. I can connect with the footballing gods, the spirits that exist. I can connect with Dave, Danny, Bill, my dad, all the players, all the games I've watched, all the friends I've got, all the things
Dave
I've
McKay,
learned.
Dave McKay, Bill Nicholson.
Yeah, sorry, I'm the younger generation. I can connect with all those, but also all the friends I've made, all the people I've bumped into. So I think for that, you know, that moment when the final whistle went and I actually got on the pitch. My old season ticket was in the Park Lane, so lower Park Lane behind the goal. And then I was lucky enough to be able to get on the pitch. And it was lovely. It was just beautiful. So that really did make me cry, actually. I got to a point where, it sort of always a little bit, well, it wasn't too much. It was just lovely, actually. And really weird, really, really weird thing happened. As I was coming, you know, when Paul Coit,
yeah,
gave his famous announcement, got everyone off the pitch, which was fantastic. It was the most orderly pitch invasion I think I've ever seen in my life.
Listen to that the Spurs show.
Because
he talks about that. And it's not what he says, it's what Mike Lee says to him about the situation.
Yeah.
And the way that his words were just, they connected beautifully, because if it was a stadium announcer, or is it some, please get off the pitch, you know, all the middle fingers would have been raised. But because it was Coity, we all connected with him, and it was fantastic.
I don't know if you've ever heard Theo Delaney talking about it, because
Theo did this for me, and he was absolutely brilliant. I asked him if he did actually ask Adele to be on, and he said no. So I was like, come on.
he was the MC. He was not the MC. He was the producer or the director for the whole finale thing. And I know Theo very well. We used to live in the same road. And for about a month or six weeks before that, I was effectively his sounding board about this whole thing. And I kept saying to him, what are you going to do? Have you built in time for the pitch invasion? And he would be looking at me going, no, we don't need that. It'll be fine. It's all. And actually, when I went on the pitch, I was sat there because he didn't watch the game in the ground. He watched it from an outside broadcast Sky TV van. And I was half my brain was thinking, poor old Theo, his timeline has completely gone up the swanny, basically, with this pitch invasion.
I'm surprised you didn't look at it, try and find him in the crowd and go, see, pitch invasion.
Told you, sir. Anyway, I was coming off the pitch. Sorry, back to my original story. I'm walking off the pitch and there's this older guy in front of me. And for no reason at all, he turns around to me and he says, do you know, the last time I was on this pitch was in 1961 when we won the league trophy. And then I said to him, well, and I don't normally this, well, apart from, I'm quite sort of Well, in fact, people that know me would laugh, but I used to be very shy about saying telling people my dad was. So I turned to him and I said,
"Come on,
actually, I've got to tell you, my dad was John White." And this guy was absolutely somewhere. He called his son over and got a photo done. So, yeah, it was a beautiful day, that.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is wonderful. Yeah. So when you said, actually, my dad was John White, what did he do?
The usual thing where people go, what? Not the John White. That's what people normally say. It's like, yeah, that's it. That's the one. And he just couldn't quite
believe
the fact that how coincidentally it was that, you know, all those years ago, he was a probably a 10, 11, 12 year old boy running on the pitch, idolizing my dad. So, yeah,
that's
great. That's
wonderful. That is wonderful. When your dad's name comes up in things I listen to and stuff, Harry Redknapp did. I don't know what he did. He did a show. Maybe it was Spurs show. Maybe you were there.
It was the Spurs show, yeah.
Yeah, and he talks about, you know, everybody that talks about your dad is like, what a player.
Yeah.
And you just think, you know, wow, it would have been brilliant to watch him, because there isn't one person that goes, yeah, he was all right, a bit sloppy, didn't have a right foot.
Yeah.
He was left footed, right? Was he?
No, he was right footed.
Right, everyone was like, yeah, no, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. And actually, I had to really humble pie, because I slagged Harry Redknapp. I slagged him off so much when he first joined us, and I showed how ignorant I was, because I actually got to meet him. When the book came out, I went up to the training ground, and he could not have been more generous with his time, and absolutely idolized my dad. He had a pair of my dad's boots at one point. And actually, I've completely changed my opinion of Harry. And the guy loves football so much, and anybody in my book that loves football really has to be given time.
Yeah. I mean, like you, Rob, I am fortunate enough to be in circles of ex-footballers and stuff through my dad, who plays golf and he plays in events and stuff. And first of all, everyone is spot on, apart from one or two, which I won't name, but everyone is brilliant, you know, with their stories. Des Walker, I never knew he was a Spurs fan.
Yeah.
You know, it comes to reason that way when he scored the goal. But he was fantastic. To interview on my show a few years ago, but people like Paul Walsh and all these guys. But Harry Redknapp, I've never met Harry Redknapp, but I'm fortunate enough to know Jamie's agent back in the day, and I grew up with him. His stories about Harry, when I saw it on Sky Sports that we'd got him, you obviously were like, oh no, not yet, but I was absolutely delighted, only because I had insight into the fact that the guy absolutely lives, breathes everything to do with football. And I knew that he would put his heart and soul into it, even with his Arsenal growing up, you know, being a fan, West Ham connections. I knew that he'd throw his heart and soul into it. And now, even now, Rob, when you listen to Harry on anything he does, and he does so many things, he still has a massive affection for Tottenham. He really does, which I love about him. And I'd love to have a chat with him and just tell him that, you know, thank you, because he was brilliant for us. He really, really was, up until the last couple of games when he made some dodgy substitutions. Anyway, what's the worst football match you ever saw?
Worst football match I ever seen? I've seen plenty. I've seen plenty, although you've probably gathered by now, I'm sort of obsessed with football anyway. So I sort of legislate the fact that I don't know whether you're the same, but if there's a game on, I will watch it, even if I'm walking across a park. So
I contemplated paying for Rangers TV to watch Rangers v Arsenal last week. You know, $6.99. I was like, well, it's Saturday afternoon.
You get help for that sort of stuff.
It's crazy.
But I think one that springs to mind is the 6-1 defeat by Chelsea in 97-98, the dark days of Christian Gross. And I remember So there's a bit, there was a bit in the old stadium, which was that weird bit underneath, between the south stand and the west stand, there was that sort of weird bit, and there was the police view bit, that sort of weird hexagonal thing. And that little section there that, well, what does that face? It faces northeast, doesn't it? Yeah. Faces towards the northeast, basically, from that corner. And me and my mate Jerry, that I've been going to football with longer than, for longer than I care to remember, we were sat at the front of that little, basically that little bit. And there seemed to be very few people around us. It was, from memory, it was freezing cold. And the
Was this the 6-1?
Yeah, I think that was the one.
Yeah.
Was that right? Yeah, I think that's the one. And from memory, it was one of those afternoons where it just got worse and worse and worse, really.
It was his first home game.
I think it was, I think that was
Because we'd gone away to Everton and Ginola scored a couple of great goals.
Yeah.
And we thought, this could be good. We were at home and in hindsight, it's really bad. But Justin Edinburgh, about 4-1, 5-1 down, Justin Edinburgh was a substitute. And they were going to bring him on and everyone booed. Obviously, like I say, in hindsight, dear old Justin and everything. But it was like, okay, is this what this guy is doing? and plus Chelsea played a B team because they left all their best players. I think they left Hasselbank and Zola out. They played Flo.
Flo scored 3 or 4, didn't he?
Yeah, who was brilliant, but he was their third choice striker, plus Spencer or someone else. And it was just unbelievable. And they still sing about it, don't they, blimmin' Chelsea?
They 6-1
up the lane and all that.
Yeah, they probably do. So I think that's the worst Spurs match. I mean, there's been plenty of others, to be brutal. But as I say, I really don't. I don't particularly. I haven't got the character that dwells particularly on disastrous. You know, I love. I think hopefully I've expressed already. I love just going to a game. You know, that whole people watching or listening to things or stuff. All that, the stuff that can fill your mind basically. And
you live near Spurs now.
Yes.
Did you live somewhere else and go and watch a local side?
No, well, I've always lived. I grew up in. I was born in Hackney. We lived in a clubhouse in Edmonton, and then when my dad died, just after my dad died, we moved to a house in Winchmore Hill, which is again another suburb of. Winchmore Hill must be 4 miles from, maybe 5 miles from White Hart Lane. So I've always grown up around here. But I have, if I go travelling or if I go abroad, I will always try and go and watch. If it has to be, I'll go and watch, local guys playing on a gravel pitch or,
I love it.
I will always just, to me, it's a great insight into, to what it, I'm trying to think, who is it? Camus said something like, all that I've learned from watching football or something. What I've learned in life is learned from watching football. I think I paraphrased that really badly. Yeah. But it just does give you an insight into society. And obviously for me, there's a massive attachment. Obviously, there's a massive attachment to my dad. But not just that. I don't talk about, and it never really struck me as that vital until I started researching the book, The Ghost of White Hart Lane. So my grandfather on my mum's side was a guy called Harry Evans, and Harry was Bill Nicholson's assistant. And Harry, he played at Southampton, he played at Exeter, he was the manager at Aldershot. So there's this fundamental sort of football, mix of football in my DNA. And I think that's, go back to the original point, I think, well, that's why I don't really, worst matches is a really difficult thing to quantify for me.
And were you any good?
I was okay, yeah. I played, I guess the thing with growing up without really knowing my dad was that I didn't realise, I think if I'd known now what I knew then, I would have been better. Life is built around confidence. Life is built around... Well, you work with youngsters, don't you? If you tell somebody they're good at something, it makes a lot of difference. I know all the teams that I played in, I was decent. I went to college in down in Bournemouth, and for a couple of seasons I played as a team called Swanage Town, Swanage and Hurston Town, and they were in the Western League. So I played for them when I was 19, 20. Got up with a hangover more times than I care to remember.
So did you grow up in Bournemouth and Swanage?
No, I went to college there when I was
college. Sorry,
when I was 18. So I went down there when I was 18 and stayed there till I was mid 20s. Actually, I stayed longer. That's where I sort of ended up just staying around down there. So I played a decent standard, but was never fit enough and never confident enough. And actually, the thing I could do well was read the game and run a lot. So I remember distinctly being told by my manager, I just want you to sit on their number eight, their number 10, whoever the ball player is. And when he gets the ball, stop him doing what he does. And actually, some of my worst feelings coming off of a football pitch were back then, because I wasn't sort of game where you'd come off, you'd touch the ball three times and people go, oh, you did really well today. And I'm sort of I love football, but I love good football. Mm. And I don't love that whole role of just breaking stuff down. And it's quite
Dyer from let me caveat that, a Dyer from 4 years ago.
But actually, one thing I have inherited, I still play, I play six aside on a Thursday night. And there's two things I've got. One is I can't understand people that don't, it comes quite naturally to me. So I've always had a really good spatial ability, which is something my dad had, I believe, having talked to enough people about it. And the other stuff is sort of a natural technique, really. So I take umbrage at the Dyer thing. More Højbjerg.
Is there this is just a question that's popped into my head.
Yes.
Is there has there been an approach for a movie?
A friend of mine did a short film, which is it's half an hour long, and I think that's still on Apple iPlayer or Amazon. It's called The Ghost, and Emilia Fox plays my mum in that film. And Emilia Fox, that's her name, is it? Emilia Fox
from
Prime Suspect. No,
Prime Suspect.
Is that the one? Yeah, her.
Not Prime Suspect. No,
you know the one
where she's the forensic. Yeah. Yeah,
that's the one. She plays my mum,
and she's the sister of the loathsome.
I think she's cousin of.
Let's get our politics out there right now, because I can't stand him.
Lawrence Fox. So somewhere out there, there is a film that's good. Actually, I stepped back. I didn't step.
Sorry,
back.
Yeah. So because I think, Rob, that it would be such a great film, but it's almost like, you know, the ending would be like, no way.
Well,
what? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Funny enough, when the book came out back in 2011, one of the people I spoke to did a really good piece on me is Matt Dickinson, who was the Times chief football writer at the time, and he said almost exactly what you said. He said, I didn't know much about your dad. I just knew that there was this player, John Wyatt. And he said, I read the book, and he said, I could not believe. He said, the ending, if you wrote that as a piece of fiction, people would turn around to you and say, well, that's rubbish. You're
stupid. Couldn't you think
of a better ending than that? So it's, you know, it's just something I've sort of had that through my whole life, I guess, just that how completely surreal that ending was, really. But in a way, it is a great story. It's a very sad story, but it's a great story.
I gave it to my dad a few years ago as a Christmas present.
Uh-huh.
And he was thrilled, and he thought it was absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And I said to him, I've spoken to Rob a couple of times. Oh, breaking news. Tottenham signed winger Brian Gill from Sevilla. Eric Lamela going to Sevilla. We knew about that, didn't we? Did we know about that?
I think we did. That's not breaking, really, is it?
He's just got across the ticker tape now, so I should really concentrate on.
He's going to be a new whoever the last hopeful winger that we've bought from wherever. You know, we just do that.
He's the new Postiga.
Or Nkudu or Jose Dominguez, Ralph Fox.
Oh goodness, those names might come up later in this chat. But let's get through this. We're getting on all right. We're doing all right. Have you got to get back to work, Rob?
No, not at all. No, I'm self-employed, so you know, I'm the boss.
I'm a teacher, so I've got another 5.5 weeks to do this. We're all right.
There's a mate of mine actually. He's a really big Spurs fan. A Norwegian guy, Martin, and he's a teacher in Norway. And he said when he was trying to decide, he's a bit younger than me, and he's 40 actually. He said when he was trying to decide whether he was going to be a teacher, he went and spoke to a family friend who's a teacher, and this guy said, "I'll give you 3 good reasons for being a teacher: June, July, and August." Because in Norway they get June, July, and August off, and Martin always tells me that it's a great thing. And I, yeah, you deserve it, you know.
Oh no! Listen, I mean, similarly to that, I was on holiday in Spain 6 weeks. When I first started teaching, so I was younger, didn't have a wife or anything, single. Yeah. My parents have got a place in Spain, so lying on a sunbed. 3 weeks in, I'm dark brown, and I'm lying on the sunbed. Get a tap on the shoulder, and it's my sister. She said, "You're right." I said, "Oh yeah, how you doing?" I said, "Oh, are you here for a week or 2 weeks?" And she said, "No, just 5 days." I said, "All right, what is that?" She said, "Well, I work in PR in London." I said, "All right." She went, "How long are you here for?" I said, "Well, I said 3 weeks already, and I've got another 3 weeks to go." She went, "Right." Went home, quit her job, got on a teacher training course, and now she's a teacher.
Wow. That's brilliant.
But we don't do it for the holidays, Rob, honestly.
No, it's yeah, that's just a benefit. Good for you.
No, it's good fun. It's good fun. So let's do the next question, which is, have you ever been at a football match and it scared you?
Yeah, I have actually. Back in the, a couple of instances. Well, one was distinctly remember, again, not great with dates, but I think, I'm pretty sure it was early September 1981, and it was when we got beat 4-0 at home by West Ham.
Okay.
And I went with a mate of mine, and so what would I have been? I would have been 16, I think, ish, yeah. And I think around that time, like late 70s, early 80s. I started properly going to Spurs in the season we went down to Division 2, so 77. Yeah. And like, I guess I try and justify my life by saying like everybody does, but I was on the fringe of the hooligan stuff, you know, just never, I was from a suburb, I never got involved in that stuff, but I used to get an excitement out of being right on the edges of that and you know, going to places. And I remember me and a mate getting in the corner of the, so the West Ham fans had the Park Lane, which was the south stand for older viewers in black and white away, you know, so that in that south stand, and I think it was just after half time it all kicked off, and we were in the corner of the where the shelf met the Park Lane, basically. Yeah. That little bit there. And all sorts of stuff.
Well, there was always trouble back in the day.
Yeah, there was always trouble. And I think it was, you know, it's my own fault for being there, basically. But I was there because there was a bit of excitement that could be had from saying you were there and you're on the edges of it. And there was no way I was going to get involved. I was too soft for that stuff. And, you know, that's been the story of my life, thankfully, is I can run faster than I can, you know.
I'm with you on that, Rob. Absolutely.
I'd rather run than anything else, you know.
Get out of Dodge. That's my theory on life.
And anyway, we were stood there, me and my mate Mark Armstrong, and all sorts of stuff was getting thrown over. You know, this was when people were throwing darts and sharpened 50 pence pieces and all sorts of stuff flying in our direction. And we both looked at each other and went, you know what, should we go? So we... There was that strange bit where the police horses used to come in that corner.
Yeah.
So we just walked out there. And as we walked out to the guy that was with the big metal gates, he said, "Where are you going?" I said, we want to go. He said, "Do you realise if I let you out of the ground, you're not going to be able to come back into the ground?" And we just both looked at him and went, "Yeah, so we don't want to be in the ground, so we want to go." And that, I think, was the most scared. There was one incident after that, which was the cup quarter final against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. So 82 maybe. Again, not, yeah, 81 cup final, 81 or 82. Anyway, that the one we won, Mickey Hazard scored.
Yeah.
You ever meet Mickey? Of course you'll have met Mickey. He never told you about that.
Mickey's wonderful. 82, I think.
Sorry?
82, I think, yeah.
82, yeah. And after that game, again, I'd gone with a group of mates and there was a lot of trouble afterwards. And I remember I remember a police horse getting pushed into a shop. This, like the shop window, the weight of people just pushed this police horse and the crowd. And the shop window broke.
Yeah.
And I got separated from my mates. And anybody that's been away to Chelsea, I didn't know where the tube station was. The closest one was Fulham Broadway, but obviously that was all cordoned off. So I was walking around that area trying to work out where the next tube station was, not wanting to ask people. And that was quite a scary experience actually back then as a teenager basically.
Yeah. My dad once told me when I started going on my own, he said, find out who the opposition are playing in their next home game.
Yes.
Because he said one of his mates were sort of stopped in the street and said, who do you support? And it was opposition fans, Chelsea. And he said, Chelsea. And he said, but who we got next home game? And he didn't know. And they started on him and luckily he got away. So he just said, find out who they got next home game and you should be all right. But like you, Rob, I get out of Dodge. I'm not interested.
Yeah, well, thankfully, I don't have to worry about that too much now. Yeah, I'm past the demographic, hopefully.
Mate, we've got a bunch of questions to get through, so let's get these done. It's absolutely, and I know people listen to this. It's fascinating. It's so wonderful. A, talking about Spurs, but Rob, talking to someone that is so passionate about Spurs yourself, with connections to Spurs, obviously with your dad. Mm-hmm. Just thanks so much because it's just brilliant. Thank you.
Pleasure. It's really good. It's really nice things to talk about.
That's lovely. The weather outside is a load of rubbish, so we're not missing any sunshine. What about a player that you used to love, but you don't anymore?
I wouldn't say so. The player I've chosen.
You can say Eric Lamella if you want.
No, because poor old Eric. I've never hated him. I never disliked him. I was just. It's that typical. It's not just Spurs, actually. It's that thing of waiting for potential to be fulfilled and it doesn't happen. But actually, I think in recent history, it's for me, it's Harry Winks, actually.
What a shame.
My friends will tell you, I'm particularly hard on Spurs players that wear the number 8, obviously, because that was my dad's shirt prior to Jimmy Greaves taking over the shirt when my dad died. So I give every Spurs number 8 a real hard time, and they have to be they have to be the real deal, basically. And I think when Harry Winks came into the side, there were quite a few of us that thought he was going to be the real deal. And I don't understand why. I don't know what the background is. I know nothing about him as an individual. Apart from what I read or what I talk to people about. But for some reason, he seems to have, I don't know if he believes his own hype or whatever. He just has really lost his way. And it'll be another one of those Spurs players that ends up at, I don't know, somewhere in the Championship, probably, or, you know, Fulham or somewhere like that. It's a shame, but I don't hate him.
It's a real shame. And it's, you know, you just need it. And we've been saying it for 2 or 3 years now. Pass the ball forward.
Yes.
If you give the ball away, that's fine. But let's at least see something that you're trying to do. And you know what? You'll probably do it because you are a cultured. He's a cultured footballer, isn't he?
He's a
good little player. Give it a go. You know, collect the ball. Have a look around the park. Play a forward pass. At least we'll, you know, go, oh, you could see what you're doing there. But just this constant getting it, laying it off, drives you mad.
It's almost I think a lot of players now look at their pass completion stats, and that is for them is enough. That pass side or pass back is another two passes that are on this fantastic pass completion rate they've got. Yeah. But it doesn't tell you where the passes were. And as
what about in the opposite to that is a player that you defend, other people don't like him.
I spent so many years defending poor old Moussa Sissoko. Not poor old Moussa Sissoko. You know, the Wembley days where, yes, he did struggle. Yes, where he did look like he looked like a pub team player. But actually, I've always been reasonably sort of constructive, I think, with my criticism. I think probably Moussa, but then, you know,
he's still at the club, Rob.
He's still at the club, but I think he'll enter into the Stefan Freund sort of, you know, that will be his legacy will be that sort of person that people love to laugh at, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers that question properly. I'm not sure.
But you defend him. You want him to stay?
No, I don't necessarily want him to stay, but I wanted him to stay. I think he gave us enough when he was there. I don't know at the moment who I would defend in that team. There's enough. I don't know. I just thought there was an awful lot. There's an awful lot of average players in that squad, which is, you know, it's difficult.
What's your favourite match of all time?
Oh God, I've seen so many. For personal reasons, I think. Well, there's two that really stand out. Obviously, I was at the Man City FA Cup replay, Ricky Villa goal. I was there. Every game that I could that season, and that was just it was just a brilliant thing to be part of. From a personal point of view, November 2006, Spurs against Chelsea, where we beat them 2-1, Lennon scored. And that game has got a very personal resonance for me because I went, I used to have I was a South Stand season ticket holder. But for that game, I actually went on the pitch at half time to collect a decanter that the double team were inducted into the Spurs Hall of Fame. And in their inimitable way, Spurs had forgotten to invite me or my family, not that I'm bitter about it, to the actual original dinner. So we went on the pitch at half time. So I took my two daughters, who were 6 and 9 at the time, and they still talk about it. It was actually a brilliant experience. I was lucky enough when I was about their age, about 9 or 10, Dave McKay had taken over as manager at Derby, and I got to see an awful lot of behind the scenes world that other people never saw. And that was, for me, was a little brief. Going back to the Chelsea game, it was lovely standing in the tunnel just before half time, waiting for the teams to come off so as we could go on the pitch. And there was stuff I saw there that, it was incredible, actually, and I'm really glad that my daughters had a chance to see that. And then to go on the pitch, I thought I was going to be all right with it, actually. I thought I was going to be quite cool and sorted, but actually it was incredible. It was a brilliant moment. So from the point of view of that, and from the point of view of us beating Chelsea, it was our first victory in however many 30-odd games, I think, league games against Chelsea. It was also the game, which people probably don't remember, that tackle by Ledley King on Iron Robin. That was the same game.
Was it?
I believe it was, yeah. And, of course, to cap it all, John Terry gets sent off. So that's, you know, that's probably up, that, that's up there with my favourite football match. But,
I mean, I remember walking away from that and I was with a mate and my dad being on the phone and going, what a game, what a game. Yeah, brilliant. Mourinho's Chelsea as well.
Yes, indeed.
What's your favourite country?
say if we go for devolution or whatever, I'd have to say Scotland, I guess. Obviously, my dad played for Scotland. It plays a big part in my life. And the question of who do I pick as a team to support is always Scotland, unless we're talking cricket.
You don't support England football team?
No, I really struggled, always really, really struggled with that. And I think, I was listening to Noel Gallagher, actually, on Theo's Life Goals podcast, and it's the same, similar thing for, well, actually, Noel Gallagher doesn't support any country because he doesn't feel he belongs to anything. But I've got much deeper roots for Scotland, obviously, because my dad played for them. I've got more family there. I feel more connected to Scotland. But as my relatives say to me, whenever I talk about moving up there, they say you should come in January, February and see what it's like then. But so I think.
Where do they live?
They live in there's a place called Musselburgh, which is where my dad grew up. And it's a suburb of Edinburgh, basically.
Okay.
It's a great part of the coast from there. Right along to North.
So not north.
No, this is just, it's the part of the coast from Edinburgh to North Berwick.
Yeah.
And if you ever go up there, you should go and visit around there because it is absolutely beautiful. I don't know whether I could live there. I think last year I was sort of basically, I was going to take a sabbatical from my life. And Argentina was the place that I'd earmarked to go and do some really big travelling, and part of the earmarking for that was obviously how the obsession that Argentina has with football, which is probably matches mine. I've never been, but I want to go. I guess the other two places, I lived in Australia for a while, which was great. I lived in Sydney when I was in my mid-20s, and New Zealand is an amazing place, so I'm not narrowing it down at all, basically, am I?
No, but they're all good. Let's narrow it down with this.
Yeah.
Best food.
I think Spain is up there. Tapas is fantastic. There's nothing better than just sitting in a beautiful little Spanish village, taking 2 or 3 hours over lunch. Went to San Sebastian maybe 10 years ago. That was beautiful. Managed to go and see, is it Real Betis? No, Sociedad. Real Sociedad play. So I think Spain, food wise, Spain does it for me, definitely.
Okay. Cold beer.
Yeah, cold beer. For me. Yeah.
Oh, I'm terrible. I like American food.
Okay.
wherever I go with the missus, I'm like, come on, let's go to a Hard Rock Cafe. And she's like, okay, they do good cocktails. Great. No, anywhere there's a nice cold beer, that's what I like.
Good.
Who's your most hated footballer?
The word hate, and I use the word hate, and I shouldn't use the word hate because I don't like the word hate. And I know I've talked to Flab about this before on the Fighting Cock, and but we go to grounds and we do hate other things. It's irrational. Anyone that wastes their talent, and that's very obvious, obvious reasons psychologically why. I guess people like David Bentley. I don't hate him as an individual, but I hate anybody that has a talent that just drifts away.
Yeah.
And I think, like most of us, soul's pretty close, pretty high up there. And yeah. I know it's an obvious one. And I don't like... there was that thing on Twitter recently where that guy calls him out in a restaurant. I mean, what's the point? It's a fellow human being. Life's too short to hate individuals. But I always remember that the poster, we hate you so much because we loved you so much. That sort of sums up the feeling that people can have with him. But I think hate is a real, sorry. Silence you.
Sorry, Rob. The internet's just being a bit dodgy.
That's all right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. It's cool.
We're back on. There's only a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I lost you right at the end of the...
Yeah. What did you ask me something?
No, not at all, no.
Cool. What about a football club you hate the most?
A football team I hate the most? It's a really simple one. 2003-2004 Arsenal side. I struggle over that word. I'm going to try and say it again. I can't say it. Invincibles. The team that are proud of winning 26 matches, drawing 12, where the Spurs double team won 31 matches. Actually, they played four matches more. But even if you took those four matches out of that, they would still have won more games. They drew four matches. They lost seven. The Arsenal Invincibles team scored a grand total of 73 goals. I know you like stats. I think you're a maths teacher. Is that right?
No, well, I teach everything, but I love stats. Yeah.
So Arsenal in that stupid campaign that they call the Invincibles, they scored 43 and they let in 26. The double team won. They scored 115 goals and they let in 55. It sort of says it all. There's so many players in that horrible team that were, you know, just players you would. It's really easy to dislike. I was going to use the word hate then. I was going to fall into my own trap then, basically. Yeah, is that specifically?
The again, the internet is just it's coming in and out, but it's a good answer. But overall, it's Arsenal, right, rather than Chelsea.
Oh yeah. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's. I think not just growing up so close to it, and they don't. You know, other teams like West Ham and Chelsea and. I'm trying to think who else we should hate. Really don't compare at all. It's almost like a phobia.
Okay, so who is your favourite ever player?
Favourite ever player, if we're... Spurs player, I think it's got to be either Glenn Hoddle or Steve Perryman, really. Glenn, because I was sort of... That was the Well, both of them were playing when I started going to football, a lot, and was young enough to be very influenced. And Glenn, it was the stuff, just the unbelievable touch, the unbelievable vision, the unbelievable skill levels. And for Steve Perryman, both of whom I've been lucky enough to meet and chat and, spend a little bit of time with. For Steve, it was just always being there, always being just dependable, you know. If you needed,
I think you're right. Yeah, this is what everybody says. And if you could put, we talked earlier about Holbier, but, those sort of levels, but week in, week out, right, Rob?
Yes, exactly. Hopefully enough people listen to or read what Steve Perryman has said about Spurs, but also listen to, whenever he does a podcast. And he really does get it. And it's not just, again, it's back to stuff I've said earlier, but he really just gets the love of football, that absolute obsession with football. And I guess he was a link between the 60s right through till the 80s, really, at the club. It's not to say I haven't loved players since, but that I guess Spurs players, they would be the two that would be up there for me.
And Hoddle, Rob, I mean, I just about missed out because I was, when he left, 87, I was 11. Uh-huh. So I wasn't really into football till I was about 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Because I was a massive Shaking Stevens fan. And quite frankly, my dad was like, can't play football. And I said, no, I'm going to do some
Shaking
Stevens in my bedroom. He's like, okay. Bit different, but fine. Liberal and all that. So I got into football eventually, just as Hoddle was leaving. And then Waddle was my hero, my first ever hero. He was, again, fortunate enough to meet him, and, you know, just heart in the throat moment when I met him. And I've met Hoddle, and like everybody says, he is just the most wonderful person to speak to. So just generous with his time, and he doesn't, again, I think he's someone who doesn't understand how much we appreciate him and how much we think he's a wonderful player. But Rob, tell me what he was like to watch, because I never watched him properly. What was he like?
It was incredible. It was just, I think it was just the fact that he was a cliche, but he was one of our own. It was somebody that you know, the early sort of 70s Spurs players, a lot of them were quite functional. There were some good, very good players there. But whereas this guy was, you could have put him. I mean, Cruyff is a big hero of mine as well. And you could have put Glenn. It just made you proud, actually, of being a Spurs fan, because he was that good. And I remember years ago when I lived in Sydney, talking to Don McAllister, who was a defender in that late 70s side, or the mid 70s side that went down and then came back again. And he said, and I think I've read it many times, there are other people saying that Hoddle did stuff in training, whereas as a fellow professional, you stood there and you thought, how has he done that? And again, you know, from a fan's point of view, it was the stuff you saw, it was incredible. It was lovely. Oh, and just the way he moved and everything about, you know, everything was just, it was fantastic.
Yeah. I asked Mickey, I said, you know, obviously we've got the goals, Forest, Man United, Oxford, Watford, you know, all those great goals that we've seen. But I said, what was it like in training? Did he like score amazing goals like, you know, once a week? He just goes, all the time. Don't you just go, yeah. Wow, what a goal. And can you imagine, like,
Mickey,
who appreciates football so much, to go training with this guy and just see him do it constantly?
Yeah, just so easy, really. Incredible.
57 caps. When you think, like, you know. Yeah. And I remember growing up and my dad always saying, I can't believe Hoddle's not in the side. When Brazil would have built the team around him, and you know, but there we go.
Yes.
What about a favourite manager? Who's your favourite ever manager?
Spurs manager. I think Martin Jol, actually.
He started it all, didn't he? It's revamped.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was a really, really good side. If you look back, it was a fantastic side, actually. Pochettino obviously runs it close, but I don't know. Maybe I think something in my personality doesn't like stuff that's too popular, and I struggle a lot with the Pochettino, the people that won't let go. And I know I'm guilty of not letting go with stuff in my life, but yeah, so definitely, I think Martin Jol, for various reasons, yeah.
Fantastic. No, absolutely. And I think if you bumped into Martin Jol or you met him, you know, in a bar or whatever, and you said, I'm a Spurs fan, I think he would absolutely embrace you and tell you all the stories and Birbidav and all that sort of stuff, you know, your chances. brilliant. I think he started it all, because we had the debacle of Santini, who left after 3 weeks, and quite rightly, I think it was the West Ham fans were chanting about why he left. And then Jol took over, and he was like, right, this is my club now, and I'm going to sort it out. And what a shame that it didn't last longer.
Yeah.
What about your legendary player?
From football in general or Spurs? Football in general.
Up to you. For me, it's Diego Maradona.
Favourite player of all time is Maradona, I think. Yeah, definitely. Like I was saying, you know, there's just the unbelievable will to win, which, you know, how he goes to Napoli and transforms that team. How he manages to, whether for good or bad, that, you know, the hand of God, what an incredible thing. So yeah, I think that probably, I was quite blown away actually watching when Messi played for Barcelona, obviously against us at Wembley, in that match. But yeah, it's got to be Maradona. And I'll quickly drop in, name drop, that I, through a whole convoluted set of circumstances, one of the highlights in my footballing life is listening to a message on Ozzy Ardiles' phone, a voicemail message from Maradona, talking in Spanish or in Argentinian to Ardiles about a game that he'd managed, a game that Maradona had managed. It was on Ardiles' phone, and I was hungover, and so was Ozzy as well. And anyway, it's a long story, which was in Dublin a few years ago. So, yeah, that was quite surreal. And you think to yourself, how did that happen? How does my life end? Not end, but how do I get to a position in my life where I'm stood in a lift with Ozzy Ardiles, who's holding his phone next to my ear with a voicemail message from Diego Maradona talking about a game that he'd was manager. Yeah, it's bizarre. But anyway, there we go.
And you were hungover.
Yes.
Ardiles was hungover.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hazard a guess that Maradona was hungover.
I think Diego was still probably partying at the time, actually. From what I understood of the message, and I don't speak much Spanish, but yes.
Fantastic. Ozzy is, what a wonderful guy Ozzy is, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic bloke. What about your favourite ever goalkeeper?
Although I never saw him play, just as a person, and from the film and from the aura around him, Pat Jennings. Yeah, it has to be. I remember as a kid watching those one-handed, just coming and grabbing the ball one-handed, collecting crosses. And I know it's easy to say, oh, footballers now, you know, that, you know, punching the ball away. Just some of the stuff that you saw with Pat. And again, lucky enough to have met him and talked to him. And yeah, it's got to be Pat Jennings, really.
It's got to be Pat Jennings. Pat Jennings is the greatest goalkeeper of all time, in any
yes,
you know, walk of life ever. In the world, you know, it's amazing, Rob, isn't it? When you think about Spurs' greatest ever lineup, we've certainly got the best ever goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
We've arguably got the best ever striker in Jimmy Greaves.
Yeah.
According to Pele, the greatest ever player, we've got the best ever central defender, which is Mike England. And then we've got players like Paul Gascoigne and Glenn Hoddle. And I truly think that the Spurs greatest 11, including subs, is the best of all time. I mean, when you think about the greatest ever striker, Jimmy Greaves, greatest ever defender, Mike England, greatest ever goalkeeper, you know, we're a third of the way there.
Yeah, definitely.
And we haven't even got
a space for David Mackay. You know,
David Mackay and Klinsmann and people like that. I mean, it's just incredible. And Maradona, who played for us, of course.
True, yes,
let's
indeed
not forget that. What about your greatest ever defender? Gary Doherty. You're not allowed to say him.
Yeah, definitely. Or Pascal Chimbonda, of course. How can you talk defence without talking Chimbonda? I've got a massive soft spot for Chris Hughton. I don't know if he's our best ever, he's not, definitely not the best defender that's ever walked. But the obvious one is somebody like Maldini. But probably I like Chris Hughton.
Best ever midfielder.
That I've seen. That's so difficult. I think probably at Spurs, and for reasons, I'll tell you the reason, the Luka Modric, probably. And part of my life has been trying to work out, although there's quite a lot of film and footage of my dad playing football, I've obsessively studied football, and one of the things I've always wanted to know what sort of player my dad was. And when Modric was in his prime at Spurs, I was researching the book, and I was lucky enough to meet Jimmy Greaves, chatting to Jimmy. And at the time, I thought Modric was fantastic. And I said to Jim, I've got this obsession. I need to find out what sort of player my dad was. And I said, I really like Modric at the moment. Is that the sort of player my dad was? And he just looked at me, shook his head, and he went, nowhere near, son, nowhere near. And you think, oh, okay, then the hairs on the back of my neck, whichever hairs were remaining, were, you know, that they stood up. And I think Modric has gone on to become a brilliant midfielder. So probably as an attacking midfielder, it would be Modric.
Have you got a pair of your dad's boots or anything?
I've got a couple of pairs of my dad's boots, yeah. They're lovely things. There's one Adidas pair. And one no branded pair. They're like they look like a pair of ballet shoes. And I think when I spoke earlier, when I went to meet Harry Redknapp, I had read an article that said he had a pair of my dad's boots that he was given because he trained with Spurs when he was a junior. Harry did, and he was given a pair of my dad's old boots. And when I went to meet him, I took a pair of my dad's boots with him, and I took these out to show him. And it was like giving a kid a Christmas present. It was absolutely amazing. And these things are sort of handmade with leather studs in them, the ones that aren't Adidas. And he just couldn't believe it, Harry. He was saying, these are so close to the boots that I had. I've got no idea what happened to them. And then basically I was sat in his office with him, and everybody that went past him, he called them in and was showing them these boots. And Jermaine Defoe was one of the people that came in, and Jermaine Defoe could not believe, A, how fragile these boots seemed and how lightweight, but also the history behind them, really. Yeah, so I've got a couple of pairs. Unfortunately, they're too small for me to wear. You know, that whole Billy's Boots thing. It would have been nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no. Wow, okay. And, you know, sorry to labour the point, but have you got shirts and...
I've got Scotland shirts. I've got three or four Scotland shirts.
How many caps did he get?
Good question. I think it's about 23. As I said before, okay. I'm not brilliant.
Caps?
Sorry.
Do you have caps?
I've got caps. Yeah, they used to get three. They basically got almost one a season, I think, or one. No, it was one for every three games in those days. Okay. So they would only get awarded a cap. It would still count as a cap, but it was only for three games. So I've got...
I'm getting a bit fanboy now.
No, it's all right. Next time you come up for a game, get in touch and you can come and have a look if you want them.
Yeah,
but I've never, ever seen one of my dad's Spurs shirts. And I remember talking to... Sorry, it sounds like I've been dropping names left, right and centre, but it's not. Well, it's just the way of my life.
I do that all the time.
I remember talking to John Pratt about just about my dad, basically. And he was saying that basically in those days, they wouldn't get a new shirt every game, basically. A shirt would be a season thing. That would be it.
Yeah.
And he said when he started the club, there was a massive... like a picnic hamper, but you know, the baskets that Mourinho hid in, the big wicker baskets. He said that was absolutely full of old kit. And he said when we went to the gym to play five-a-side, or we would just grab a shirt and put that on, and that would be what we would do what we would play in. And he also said,
and that was the old shirts.
Yeah, which broke my heart completely. He said, and sometimes if you were detailed to go and clean the windows on the West Stand, you would just grab a shirt, take that up, and use that as a cloth that you would clean the windows from, because there wasn't a sentimentality. There wasn't people going, "Oh, this could have been
celebrity."
No, exactly. So I've yet to see Spurs 8 of my dad's. A lot of the stuff when my dad died, a lot of it just disappeared, got given away, got appropriated. So there's a really big collector. I think his name's Neville Evans, actually. And I think Neville, as far as I'm aware, I don't think there's ever been a Spurs shirt of my dad's that's ever which is quite fitting when you think of the Ghost nickname, you know.
Yeah. Oh, amazing stuff.
It's like a holy grail for me, you know.
Yeah, no, incredible. What about your favourite ever striker?
Spurs, I although everybody knows he had problems, I loved Berbatov. And I just loved those moments in a game where you would just think, well, it was a bit like I said about Hoddle earlier, actually, it just sprung to mind there. Games where you just think, what did he just do? I need to slow that down. I need to watch the highlights when I get home and just see how he turned the ball or what he controlled it with. And yes, as it's quite openly recognised, he wasn't the greatest team player in the world. But I just think, he's obviously Harry Kane. I think we'll, if he does go, when he does go, whatever, we'll all be lucky enough to have been to be able to say we were there when Harry Kane was doing what he was doing. So either of those two, really.
Wow. Okay, fantastic. Well, look, that's the end of the questions.
Wow.
Apart from one more.
Okay.
Which is, aliens come down
from
outer space. They zone in on you. Mm-hmm. They say, Mr. Rob White, the member of the Tottenham Hotspur Trust, the most famous fan trust in all of football, who represent the fans and the chairman alike. Without any dispute ever, you are the most famous person in England that knows football. You are so knowledgeable. What football match shall we watch? Because we've heard about this thing. What football match shall we watch? And you say, aha, watch this. And you hand them a DVD, and it's a DVD of the greatest football match of all time. And you say, watch this, and you will understand what football is. And you hand them the DVD. What is the DVD you hand them? Rob White.
Wow. Okay. So I think that they'll have progressed above DVDs, basically. That's my first thing with this.
I think they when I first started doing these lines of questions, DVD technology.
Okay. Well, I think the DVDs, they look at them and think, what is this? So I'm basing my supposition on the fact that they've got like a transportation, like they can teletransport. They can teletransport people. So there's two places I would take them. One would be the Wembley Stadium in 1981 to watch the Tottenham Manchester City replay, because that was, I think that was probably the highlight of, well, not the highlight. That was one of the things. One of the most amazing experiences of being a Spurs fan that stuck in my mind when that Villa goal goes in. And it did seem like the stadium had taken a collective breath as that move. You know, we've all seen that move so many times. I think it stopped. It seemed like the world had stopped. And then when the goal goes in, I remember going down probably 30 or 40 feet, this surge of tidal wave of people that just pushed its way from the back, not the back, halfway up the stadium stands. So yeah, I'd probably take them there, and that might give them some experience. I would also, if I could have another quick choice, I would make sure they went to Hackney Marshes on a Sunday morning, and because I think that takes me back to needing to express how football can be so ordinary and so, what is it, the most important of the unimportant, I think. And if you can stand at Hackney Marshes watching people kick a ball about just for the love of kicking a ball about, then you sort of get to understand why we become so obsessive about what we
in January.
Yes, exactly, in January, in the cold and wet. And that's part, I will do that most Sundays. I will try and get along there, and yeah, I love it.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I mean, that's been fantastic. Is there anything else you want to say about the current Spurs side? Anything that's going on?
I don't know. I think like most football fans, most Spurs fans, we...
Rob's now going to go into a tirade for 8 hours.
No, I'm not. Don't worry.
Because honestly, we could go on, couldn't we?
Yeah, well, exactly. I'm going to, it's that whole thing about it's the hope that kills you, I think. That's the thing. And, you know, as Spurs fans, we're lucky enough that through our lives, we're never that far from the back pages. You know, there's always something that's going on. And if we think of football as a sort of a minor soap opera that happens in life, that, as I said earlier, it's not that important. But actually, to a lot of us, it's that contradiction between being unimportant but being the most important thing. And all of us, you know, we're expecting the most from this season, but probably we'll end up with what we normally get, which is maybe we should just lower expectations. Maybe that's the secret. I don't know.
Rob, I am not. I don't lower my expectations. I just think that, you know, look, if we get into a semi-final this year, it's good. Yeah. If we finish fifth, it's good, because you know why? If we finish fifth, then you've got City winning it, Chelsea second, Liverpool third, let's say United fourth. If we're fifth, we're above we're above Arsenal, which is great. Leicester, who apparently have got the best German of all time. You know, it's not all doom and gloom. And you know, and getting to semi-finals, who do you have to beat to get there? And, you know, there's journeys. I remember days when we'd finish 11th in the league and be out of all the cups by January.
Yeah, and it was getting to 40 points. Was a thing, really. It was a serious thing. Most of us, you know, we've been affected by that in our lives. And yeah. I think also going back slightly, you said it at the start of this, you said you're one of these people that really is into the new ground, really likes it. And I'm the same. I thought us moving away and rebuilding the stadium was the worst thing ever. And I publicly said now, you know, previously that I think that's wrong. I was completely wrong on that. And that's one of the things that take the football away from it. What I'm really looking forward to, which we touched on at the start, is that whole going and meeting my mates and seeing familiar people and chatting to people and having a beer and having a laugh. And actually, all of those things that are really important in football, and most of us, if we're being honest, the stuff that goes on the pitch, it's a sideshow. It's something that just happens that actually we should try and embrace and enjoy a little bit more. And, you know, it's actually the stuff around it, which is the quite important things, I think. And that's what a lot of us have been missing. And, you know, that's what I can't wait for that to come back, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll see you at the City game.
Yes, indeed. And definitely.
I'm coming round to yours first to have a look at those boots.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, you're from any point.
There's a new pie and mash shop that...
There is. I've been there. It's good.
Have you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the guy who owns it. The guy that runs it.
They're connected with the VAR side podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, they do a mean goat pie, but the actual pie is good in my brain. They're both good. They're all good, actually. Yeah, it's good. And we've got there's a new Beavertown pub opening on the corner, which was at the corner pin. That's ready. That's all been painted. It's sort of ready to go. Wow. There's a new art gallery there, which is okay. Good, actually, good. Yeah,
fantastic. I just hope, and I know this won't happen, because I know it will happen, but there's going to be some kind of bloody protest. You know, first game, there's going to be people with banners and stuff, and I'm like, oh, please don't do that for the first game, for goodness sake, because I just want to go and have a great day and stuff, and you know, protest some other time, but not for our first game back, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
You know, but there we go. All right, Rob.
Yes, fine, cool. I'm fine. Yeah, that's good.
Fantastic. Right. I'll see you at the lane, and come on, you Spurs.
Brilliant. It's been a joy. Thanks a lot, mate. She ain't exactly pretty, ain't exactly small. 4, 2, 3, 9, 56. You can say she got it all.